Yo, party people in the place to be. Mac Nez here on the MIC, bringing a very special bonus episode for all you ESP listeners. We're just kind of caught up in some stuff going on. I mean, nothing bad. The Zisu is on the road, and I've just been working, and I'm still trying to get over my cold. But I got a special episode for you guys this week. We will come back later with a regular episode, probably in the next few days. I don't know, maybe this weekend, we're not sure yet. But this is episode 110, and this is myself, Nez, and a friend of the show, Mike. He is going to come on, and we are going to kind of go over that new film that came out last weekend, The Nun. So here it is, and enjoy. Oh, yeah, real quick. I was supposed to tack this on to the end of our newest episode, but then that episode would have been like 100 hours long, so I'm just going to throw this out as a bonus. Yeah, so that's it. Here it is.
Forgive me, Father, for the sin I'm about to commit.
We're here to investigate the death of a nun.
The Abbey has a long history. Not all good.
Hello?
What does it say?
Callahan's here. Valak, the Defiler.
Whatever happens, whatever you may see or hear, don't stop praying.
Let me out!
The Nun. Experience it in IMAX, September 7th, rated R.
Hey, like I said earlier, Mike was going to come on, and we're going to kind of break down The Nun. You heard my review of it earlier. It was just spoiler-free, but this one that we're doing now is going to have spoilers, but... before we get into it, man, welcome back to the show, brother. How you doing, Mike?
Chilling, man. Chilling. Thanks for having me.
Good, good. This is East Society, by the way. So big shout out to Mike right before we went to San Diego Comic-Con. He hooked us up with some East Society shirts, some one-shots. So the only ones who have them are myself and the Zisu. So. We were honored to wear those while we were down there. I think Zisu wears his all the time because I made one East Society and then I made a Mac Nez one. And another big shout out, brother. Thanks so much for hooking up the Mac Nez t-shirts. I got mine sitting somewhere. I haven't wore it yet, but it came out awesome, man. I really love the little back design. On your shirts, speaking of a Teespring and all that, we'll get to that at the end of the end of this, but do they put a little design on the back of yours as well?
I do mine. I put my Red Gear, the name of my company, our logo is on the back.
Okay, cool. I still need to pick one up, but we'll get to that before we get out of here. But right now, like I said, we're going to talk about The Nun. There's going to be spoilers in this, so that's why we're putting it at the end of the show, because we just didn't want to. The Zisu, I knew he wasn't going to see it, so, and I didn't want to spoil it at all. So, The Nun, 2018. I ran through the synopsis before, but for those of you, if you don't remember it, a priest with a haunted past had a no vice on the threshold of her final vows. Are sent by the Vatican to investigate the death of a young nun in Romania. And confront the male violent force in the form of a demonic nun. The Nun, again, directed by Corinne Hardy. I don't know who that is. James Wan, he helped with the story, so I thought that was awesome. Going with the beginning of this whole nun, the first glimpse that we ever got of it was in the Conjuring 2, which scared the hell out of me. I thought that was probably the scariest part of the whole movie, but that was just something we didn't know was going to turn into what this movie was, because I can't remember when that movie it was. And we got a little glimpse of her again in Annabelle Creation, which I thought was pretty spooky. And the movie is finally here. It came out this weekend. I believe it's number one in the box office. There is a lot of mixed reviews. Some people were saying it was boring. Nothing was going on. A lot of people loved it. You heard me earlier. I thought it was all right. But Mike's probably going to change my mind because there were some things that I was really unsure of when it comes to dealing with religion. And Mike here, he's gone to Catholic school and he knows way more than I would know. So I was, he's my always the person to go to when dealing with religious things. So overall, man, but first we get, before we get into it, really, what did you think of the whole movie?
I liked it. I liked it, the idea that it seemed more of kind of like an adventure film, like kind of a quest type thing, rather than just, you know, making it really heavy-handed, like movies like The Exorcist, The Last Exorcism, Exorcism of Emily Rose, pretty much anything with the word exorcist in it. It wasn't as really like, you know, impacting, punch you in the gut. It seemed kind of a more, for lack of a better term, kind of a more fun horror movie, kind of a roller coaster type horror movie than more like psychological or, you know, metaphysical. It seemed, to me, like if you want heavy handed religion, science, metaphorics, metaphysical, John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. And of course the, you know, the fan favorite, the undisputed champ of exorcist films, The Exorcist. But as far as this one goes, I thought it was really enjoyable because it was me as the, it was the roller coaster ride. You know, going into these type movies, there's going to be jump scares and you're going to, you know, within an hour and a half runtime, they can't really bog down too much or go into religion, really like focus on that, because there's so many doors to open with that and so many ways you can decipher it and dismantle it. So all in all, I thought it was enjoyable. In my review, I gave it 3 out of 4. I thought it could have been there was some things that could have been dove, you know, deeper into. But like I said, with that kind of runtime, you kind of want to hold your audience, you know, keep them on that, like I said, again, that roller coaster type ride, rather than, you know, really hit them real hard in the gut with something that, you know, you don't want to traumatize them, but at the same time, have them come away with a good feeling like, wow, that was cool. I liked it. So.
The Valak that was mentioned, and I believe, I can't remember which, if it was Conjuring or Annabelle, all these movies kind of blend together to me. Is that a, I don't want to say a character, but is that something dealing with religion, like Bible stuff, or?
Yeah, it's one of the it's a demon, and they took some liberties with it because, like, with things like that, you really kind of have to, you know, kind of be careful. Depends on, and once again, I'm not saying that. You know, for all the listeners out there, you guys have your beliefs, and I respect that. I'm not the kind of Catholic that's going to say, you're wrong, you know, Catholicism is the only right religion. No, I'm not about that. But speaking from a Catholic background, having those beliefs, you kind of have to be careful because you don't want to say too much or dwell too much, because there's some folks that are really, really believers in that. And I will say there's some people that do experience things, visions, clairvoyance, that type of thing. So you kind of have to be careful about how much you can show, because in Catholicism, there are some names you can't mention. You're not supposed to mention, because that's opening the door for them to come through. So I think the screenwriters took a little bit of liberties with that because, It, like I said, you don't want to really kick the door open and let something like that in. Kind of like the things that happened with The Exorcist when they were filming that. The director, William Friedkin, was kind of like, it was like something we weren't supposed to mess around with. And there was a lot of things that happened on set. And that could have been due to, you know, the material. and like some things about, you know, my film, but we can get to that later. But yeah, that name is probably derived from something else, but it's not going to be said because, you know, like I said, there's some caution you have to take with that kind of material.
Oh, so that was just a name that they made up, or?
Yeah. And if you look at it, it was the last name of the head vampire played by Thomas Ian Griffith in John Carpenter's Vampires. His last name was Valak. So it's kind of like that, kind of that safe thing. Was you know, it's not saying like, that's not saying like it's Bruce Lee, but it's Bruce Lee. So it's kind of like, you know, we're not infringing on copyrights, but you kind of get the point.
you diehard martial arts artists watchers will understand that one. Dude, I've not heard that in since the Lux days. What's the shout out to John Ballinger?
Oh man, John. Yeah. John was a regular at the Lux.
God. Oh man. Dealing with this type of stuff, I mean a lot of people, like you said, like a friend of mine, she's like, I don't want to watch those movies because they like you said, they open doors and this and that. But it's good to hear from you say like they can only do so much in these films. Yeah. Especially with this one. I think this was a movie that was just full of jump scares, and they tried to scare everybody with that and with the imagery and not so much the story. I did like what was going on in the story, but it kind of seemed like you said, which I thought when I was watching it, it seemed like an adventure movie, kind of like a more scary Indiana Jones type of thing. Because at one part, there's that the character Frenchie, when he comes into play during one of the scenes, the music is like dun 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 dun, and I was like,
yeah.
which was cool. I mean, I did like Frenchie. He was played by Jonas Blockett, or I don't know. I can't even pronounce that last name. But I liked him, and I liked the Father Burke. I thought he was good. And Sister Irene, I thought she was really good. The actual actress that played the nun, Bonnie Ahrens, oh, man, she just looks creepy. Just in her normal ways.
she's had cameos in she's had parts in other TV shows and stuff as like I saw one credit she has, she played like a homeless dude. But she's kind of like, you know, up there with Javier Botet and Doug Jones, who Alec Gillis and Tom Woodruff, those guys always play practical effect monsters and type demon type creatures. So like she's getting up there as one of the iconic characters, like the nun, you know. Just real quick, kind of. So you were talking about how the imagery, you know, as you're saying about the imagery in this film. And one thing that's like really just kind of like, whoa, is the fact that they would have a demon, the image of a nun. That's like the, in as far as Catholicism goes, that is like the greatest insult. You know, that's the greatest insult. Is like that's what the devil does. Is he mocks religion. He mocks the good side of the light, like the imagery with the cross, the inverted cross, turning it upside down. That's a mocking of religion. Like in one of the Conjuring movies, in the first one, when there's the three knocks, and then Ed Warren, played by Patrick Wilson, tells the family that those three knocks are an insult to the Holy Trinity, you know, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So it's kind of like the evil is kind of like mocking that. It's making fun of it. It's disrespecting it. So the idea that this demon took the form of a nun, that's like, wow, you know, that's as far as that goes, that's crossing the line, because, you know, why would this thing choose that? Is because it's evil, you know, because it's mocking. It's telling God basically, hey, man, I'm here. Come with it.
What I liked was the very first time we saw the nun in The Conjuring 2. I just thought those few minutes of that was, to me, I thought was scarier than this whole movie. Because I think it was scary because we didn't know anything about it. I mean, even Mrs. Warren, she didn't know anything about it. She kind of knew, but not really, because she had a dream about it. And then that scene, they actually show it in the Nun, is when was that her daughter? I can't remember. I need to watch that one again. It's when she was like, "Who's that?" And you see the nun standing there. Dude, that watching that again in this kind of scared me more than everything else that was going on. This, I mean, it really
if you watch The Conjuring Part 2, pay attention, because that name comes up three times in the film. Like, for instance, one quick one. This is, you know, if you're a fan, you should know this by now. But if not, go back and watch what I'm about to tell you. The scene where the mom and the daughter are sitting in the den, and the mom is working in a notebook, and the daughter is making jewelry. If you look at these, they have these like block letters on their shelf behind Lorraine Warren, and they spell out that name. And then when the daughter is making her bracelet, there's that name on that bracelet. And there's one more in there, but you got to find it.
I saw the first one in the blocks. Had no idea what it was. I mean, because watching a lot of these movies now, I mean, I always look in the background for things. And I saw that, and I was trying to think, well, what is that? And then it just never, I must have not paid attention to anything else after that, because I remember it clearly in the blocks. But in this movie, they hardly showed the nun. I mean, I don't know if it was her, because there was so many other different nuns in this film. Like there's sometimes that you see one way in the background, or you see one looking out a window. Was that all just the different ones that were there? Because it was, you couldn't really tell, because the movie was so dark. And like later on in the film, when it really starts to get going, is then when you can realize that the main nun, Bonnie Ahrens, you can really tell by her, because you can see they never really show her face that much earlier in the film. They just kind of show you like hazy glimpses that you know that was her. I mean, I really like that. They kind of just didn't shove it down your throat. I thought the jump scares were shoved down our throat just a little too much. I mean, you knew they were coming, so it wasn't really something that scared you. I mean, I hate when they do this in the trailers. They throw them out throughout the whole trailer, so you kind of knew when they were coming. A couple of them made me jump, but I think I just wanted a little bit more of the whole backstory of the nun. I mean, they do give you the backstory, but I wanted a little bit more. Let's go to the very, very beginning with the two nuns in that one door that said "God ends here." I didn't get what the other lady, the older lady that went into the doorway. What was she telling the young one?
She went in there to see if she, I think she went in there, the older one, to see if she can find a way to shut that portal. Because she had that key. So she was searching for, she was going to take that key to go in there and take that, that relic that they were with with the blood of Christ in it. And then when she knew that, like, basically the older one knew, I'm not going to make it. So here, you take it. It's your turn, you know. And then she got consumed by that evil. But yeah, that's basically, she went in there 'cause she knew where that keyhole was. And see, that's why everybody thought the relic was that key. But, you know, as we saw when she when they solved the puzzle, Sister Irene and Father Burke and Frenchie, when they solved the puzzle, that's where the nun at the beginning, the older one, was trying to get to. But that entity was just too powerful. It occupied that space, and, you know, can't go in there and fight something like that. You know, that's a high level demon. You can't really, like, there's only so much you can do, but then you need someone with, like, it can't ever fight, you know, with the power that was in that relic. But with that nun, it was just like, you know, basically she was feeding it. And yeah, then the younger one, you know, ended up having the key, and then the story went from there. But yeah, that thing was already in there. That demon was already in that area of the castle.
So after all that, because when the older one came out and told her that, look, only a young spirited nun or whoever could stop it. Or so, I this is what I got. That one girl was like just too scared and couldn't do it. So I think by her killing herself, it couldn't get anyone else, because there was, spoiler alert, like we said, the spoilers, we already spoiled some stuff, but there was no other, those were the last two there.
Yeah.
So she goes, well, if I kill myself, it's going to stop it right here. So I liked what was going on there, but that whole place, I mean, even the townspeople said that this place is what they call it? The area that they where the castle church or whatever it was called, I can't remember what they called it, the whatever, I mean, it wasn't really, it didn't have a meaning to it, but that area where the church was, it was kind of like just a castle, what it looked like when they showed the whole, when you could see the aerial shots of it. But they said that whole area was cursed, because even the animals know a lot. Some people just think they're stupid, dumb horses, but those animals are smart, man. That horse said, nah, I ain't
going. Yeah. I'm done. Y'all going to have to walk.
Yeah. So I always like that about animals. But so it ended right there. I mean, it couldn't go any further because there was no other ones. So I like that fact did the girl that hung herself, the young nun, I knew she wanted to do it because she wanted to keep the evil Lynn, but her being out there and that young guy coming up, Frenchie coming up and actually finding her, I think he was the key to bring let the Vatican know what was going on there, to bring Father Burke and Sister Irene there. So do you think the Vatican knew what was there and what was going on? Because I think if they didn't bring Sister Irene, none of this would have happened.
Well, she the reason they chose her, because she had visions. She was a clairvoyant. So that's why she was, and with her being, you know, still in Vespers before she became a nun, before she took her final vows, she still had that innocence. You know, she hadn't committed herself to God, because basically when a young woman or a woman commits herself to God, she's basically given herself. And in turn, that's kind of like, you know, a lot of people are probably going to like upset, but it's kind of like you're giving up your virginity to God, the same way Mary did. You know, Mary was the Immaculate Conception. She was a virgin, but yet she had the child of God. She had Jesus. So when women do that, they're imitating the life of Mary. They're giving themselves to God. So when she said, we need someone that's pure, basically a virgin, they needed her, because she was still, you know, she was still powerful. Her visions were, and they didn't know that if he became a nun, if that, you know, that it would seem like there, it's kind of like how you, if you have a power and then you get into an organized religion, whatever it may be, and they start telling you that, oh, it's just this, it's that, they start defining it for you. And then you start believing that that's what it is, rather than it being a vision, you know, like in Thunderheart. He said, you must have had one of them fitful dreams. And he's like, oh yeah, it was a fitful dream. He's like, bullshit, dude, you had a vision. You know, it's, he was testing him. It was like, did you have a vision, or did you have what it is I'm telling you you had? You know, like people saying, oh, you know, that was just the wind blowing the door open, when in all actuality, there's probably a ghost standing there opening the door. So by her still staying pure, she wasn't being told what her visions were something else. She was still seeing them as visions. And as we saw in, you know, towards the end, she started to believe in the power of both. Because she wanted herself, when she, towards the end, that when she told, you know, Father Burke, okay, before we do this, I want to take my final vows, you know, and then he did the ceremony for her. And then she was still strong. You know, she was, despite being a nun, she still had that power, that otherworldly power.
So once they got into the church, and the father only went so far, because then the doors came down, that like gate or whatever, iron gate came down. Like you said, she was clairvoyant. Do you think if she wasn't even there and just Father Burke was in it, do you think he wouldn't have saw any of that in there, right? Because that's what I got. I figured that since she could see things, she saw all the nuns and everything that was going on in there. Am I right or wrong?
She would have saw it on a whole nother level. And then the way he saw it was, she would have saw it she would have saw it as what it was, which was an illusion. It was an illusion, but he would have seen it as something supernatural, like something practical. Because he saw, you know, she saw all the nuns when they were, you mean when they were doing their prayers, trying to keep it away?
Yeah, because it seemed like they didn't see Father Burke or Frenchie in the beginning, didn't see the normal looking ones. They just saw all the evil, crazy looking ones that was going on in there.
Yeah, she was in, because she had the vision. She could see those kind of things. They were being shown to her, but Father Burke and Frenchie weren't. You know, Frenchie started off right off the bat. You know, he wasn't a virgin. So, and then Father Burke, in his way, you know, it's probably, you know, his backstory was maybe, you know, he had a girlfriend or what have you, and then became a priest. But either way, he wasn't. I'm assuming, because they didn't see the things that she saw. She saw it as pure evil, and they saw interpretations of what it chose to show them, if that makes any sense. She was stronger than them, in which, you know, in a lot of the times, most of the cases is, yeah, women and children are known to be more open to seeing things. They're more intuitive than we are, than men are. And that's just how it is, man. You know, but she saw things as they really were, because all that energy in there was manifesting itself into these things that she was seeing. But as you could see, like, she saw the good side. She saw these nun spirits were there trying to help. They were still there trying to fight. But, you know, Father Burke and Frenchie just saw it as, like, you know, that as Sister Maureen was in, or Sister Irene was in trouble. They didn't see that other stuff. So they had to, she had to interpret it for them, what they were up against. But they all experienced that nun, you know, because that thing was powerful.
Yeah, that's what I figure. I figure they were going to see that, Frenchie and Father Burke, but Sister Irene was going to see everything else. And
see, it's kind of like this. Okay, imagine this. Imagine there's a veil. There's a curtain between this world and the next world. Some people can, okay, let's say there's two curtains. They're like a hallway. They're parallel. They run side by side. And in the middle, there's kind of a hallway. There's people in this world that can walk in between them, in that hallway. That's just how they are. Their energy is in there. So they experience both worlds. That's how she was. That's how Sister Irene was. But Frenchie and Father Burke were still on the other side of the veil. Now, evil in its form, its true form, can pierce the veil. See, they can't walk in between. They have to rip a hole in the curtain. They don't have the ability to just walk in and out. They have to rip it. They have to break through it, or someone else has to open it for them. See, like with Annabelle, remember when those girls were telling the Warrens about, oh, we gave this little girl's spirit permission? They opened the veil. They let that thing come in. So when, you know, you, because they, you know, it's, let me ask you a quick question. Just yes or no, we won't get into it because this is a whole nother show. Have you watched Castle Rock yet?
I've only seen the first two episodes.
Oh, dude. Okay. When you're finished with all of them, we'll talk about it. But it's kind of like, that's what I'm talking about. It has some elements of that in it.
With this, like they're saying way back in the, I assume in the night days, when they first, closed the portal, that was letting the demon out. was that World War One, the when they dropped the bombs on that church?
I don't know if it was one or two.
Cause this was was this in the '30s?
The first, when the movie first started,
the beginning was like,
is 52.
Yeah. Okay.
So it had to have been, well then if it was 1952, no, because World War II is over.
Yeah.
So
let me look into see when the timeline of this was. I mean, they said the dates and everything, but I couldn't remember exactly, because that's what I was unsure of, if it was World War One or Two. Well, the 1952. Yeah, it was in Romania. That was it was 1952. Because it says right here, I'm on a Wikipedia, the two nuns at the Carta, I think I'm pronouncing that, monastery, were attacked by an unseen presence. And then the artifact. Okay, so it was not, the year when all this was going on was 1952. When was World War? It was World War II, I assume, when they dropped the bombs on that, and then that's what re-released it, right?
Yeah, okay, so, yeah, when they dropped the bomb, it had to have been back in the 40s, and then that's what cracked open the seal. And then I guess that's when it came out. So between 1944... between 44 and 52, that's when all that stuff probably was happening at that monastery. And then within that time, they probably figured out like there was something they had to do. But that's the thing too. Like, how would, like, okay, who told the main nun, the older one at the beginning, who told her about that key?
I have no idea.
You know, so that's where that's kind of like, you know, if they, I think that's why I gave it the one thumbs down, was like, okay, where did that come from? Did she just have it? Did she find a book? Did one of the villagers tell her? Did she get a vision from God? I mean, there had to have been something that we missed, or, cause I was fully focused on this film. You know, I really wanted to get into it and understand it, because, you know, like it had a lot of religious imagery and belief behind it, so I really wanted to pay attention. But I really didn't get that. It's kind of like the red herring. They just threw it in there and said, okay, here's this key, these two nuns, action. But it's like, well, where did she get this key, and what, you know, how did, you know, because they, I mean, I don't know if they're going to do it, but, you know, I would love to see maybe a short story or quick synopsis about what happened, you know, while all those nuns were there and this thing was lurking around.
Yeah.
And then if that was happening, if it was tormenting them, then they, how did they get it? How did they get it back behind that door?
Because if it was during World War II when the bombs dropped and rewoke the demon or let it out, and it must have been happening a long time because it was 1952 when they met their end. So I don't know. Maybe this is, I mean, if you look into this whole Conjuring universe, except for The Conjuring with the other movies, Annabelle Creation, and now this one, they're going backwards. So who knows? If they do another one, maybe it'll be that story.
Yeah, I think the next one on deck is The Crooked Man.
I don't know. Let me watch Conjuring 2 again. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it looked cool, but I think that's enough for me. That's all I want. I don't want them to beat a dead horse. I mean, because look what happened with the first Annabelle. I thought that one was crap, and I was excited for it. And when it came out, I was like, oh, all right, whatever. But the second one, I mean, I love the second one. I thought that was awesome. And that also gave us another, our second little hint of the nun. So I thought that was cool. But
I have to go back and watch that scene again, because I forgot in what reference, who had that picture in Annabelle Creation. And do you remember who had that picture? Was it in those people's house, or did that nun have that picture?
I want to say, I don't remember, but I want to say the nun had it, because they were talking about some kind of nun, and then they went, oh, well, here's the picture. And you see all the other nuns standing there, and faintly in the back.
Oh, dude, that gave me so much chills, but excited at the same time.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, who's that? She's like, oh, I don't know. We never really, like, talk to her or anything, but
yeah. So I think the build up for this movie, I wanted just a little bit more. I mean, I'm always going to go back to what you said. This was an adventure movie. We got to find the artifacts to close the portal to end everything, and that's what they did in this. I mean, yeah, there was a lot of spooky imagery in the background and jump scares galore, but I think the thing at the very end, that like once evil is punished and is stopped for the time. I mean, they never ended it. I mean, so you knew it was still there. We know it's still there because of we saw it in The Conjuring 2. Well, that was the first time we saw the nun. So you know she's still roaming around. But at the very, very end of the film, it's 21 years later. And we get to the university seminar. I'm reading this on Wikipedia, everyone. And this is when, what's her name? Carolyn, I don't know, the mom from the first Conjuring, when she's actually looking for the Warrens, and she sees the footage of the exorcism. And this is when we see Maurice. And then they start kind of talk about that Frenchie was Maurice, because Frenchie, they just called him that. That wasn't his name. And at the very end of the film, before we get to this flashback or flash forward, you see that Maurice has that inverted cross on his neck. And then they show the whole exorcism scene, which I thought was brilliant. I mean, I loved it. It kind of just got me excited. I was like, damn, I seen The Conjuring, but I remember that scene, but I don't remember names and anything. So, I mean, it was a good job to James Wan and I think Gary Dua Berman, I think that's how you say his last name. James Wan, awesome. I love him. I'm glad that they went back and kept that character and brought him back in this one.
James, you got to give it up too to Lee Whannell, because Lee Whannell wrote all that. Like Lee Whannell and James Wan, they both wrote, you know, the Conjuring films. They wrote the Insidious films, which are, in my opinion, really brilliant storytelling with all those four films. And then I think you and I love these films because they leave these little Easter eggs. And then when we go see the films and everything ties in, and then you're like, oh yeah, you know? So like you were saying with this one at the, you know, when they showed the, where Lorraine kind of went out of it for a little while, because after this, after Frenchie during the exorcism whispered something to her, that's when she kind of had to take herself out. Remember, if you're in tune to these movies, remember Ed was saying that Lorraine locked herself in the room for 8 days and didn't want to be bothered. And then when in Conjuring 2, when Ed got up in the middle of the night and was like, I had to paint this because this was in my head. And then that's when, boom, we see the nun. He painted the picture of the nun, which that picture, that picture is so legendary now. That painting is just so, it's so awesome, especially when, you know, when they turned the lights off and the eyes were still glowing. I mean, that was.
I wonder where that picture is. Is it sitting on some executive's wall or is it in a closet somewhere?
I think Lee Wannell has it in his office. I think that's where he had. And then if you notice in those movies, in Insidious and also in Paranormal Activity, there's a painting, this painting of this African person that's kind of dark and has this red garment on, but has these really striking white eyes. If you look at that painting is in both the Insidious and the Paranormal Activity movies. So I think he has that one too in his office.
Damn. Seeing this one just makes me want to watch Conjuring 1 and 2 and both Annabelles again. Annabelle, I have it and I'll get through it, but
watch the 10-minute version. do you know the timeline now?
Of
Conjuring these, universe?
So there's what, 5 movies now. So if we put them in order, timeline-wise, it's The Conjuring. Oh, no, I'm sorry. The Nun, Annabelle Creation, then Annabelle, then Conjuring 1, then 2, correct?
Yep.
All right. So, I like what they do, James Wan, because he kind of goes backwards. I mean, he did that with the Insidious films. I know some people didn't like the last few. I've liked all of them.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the first one being my favorite one, but I enjoyed every one of them. So
just real quick, tell me if you agree with me on this. And everybody out there, I'm sorry, spoiler alert, but yeah, you should have seen Insidious: The Last Key by now. So here we go. All of that happened to that family, as far as the little guy goes, that went to sleep and flew away, that was all Elise's fault, because she opened that door and didn't close it.
Yeah, I mean, it was all her fault. So I really liked her character, and I felt sad for her. I mean, especially in I think it might have been the third one. I don't remember. That was the scene that kind of really made me tear up. But yeah, I mean, if you sit there and think about it, all of that was her fault. I mean, she left those doors open. That was the reason why everything happened. So
yeah.
Do you think there's going to be another one? I mean, because I know they kept going backwards and backwards. I don't remember how the second one ended.
Conjuring 2?
No.
Insidious?
Insidious, yeah. Did it, because she died. She died in the very first one.
Yeah, chapter 2 ended where she went to that Mexican family's house and the girl was in the wheelchair. And
oh, she was in that one again, huh?
Yeah, because her ghost was, because Specs and what's the other guy's name? Specs and the big guy.
Yeah.
They went to that house and they said, hi, you know, our friend Elise told us to come here and talk to you. And then the girl in the wheelchair saw Elise standing behind them. And then you kind of heard behind, as they focused on Elise's face, you kind of heard that crackling sound that lipstick demon made. And that's where that ended. Okay. So it's like, was that thing tormenting that girl in the wheelchair?
All right. You're going to make me look it up. Specs. Tucker.
Yeah.
I kind of want a movie of just them two. I liked them. I thought I liked them in all of them, basically. But The Nun. Talking about it now, I think my grade went up a little more, because sitting there in the theater, I was kind of like, I'm recording. I just seen The Nun. So we're actually recording this before. So yeah, I did mention some things earlier, which I'm predicting the future. So I had to let you guys know we're recording this before we actually do the regular show. Forget what I said at the beginning of this segment, but that's why I wanted to talk to you about it, because you knew a little bit more of what was going on in this film. So of course I'm going to buy it. I'm a completist. I have to have it in my collection. I mean, yes, there's some franchises with one or two that are stupid, but they're still in my collection. Like Jason Goes to Hell. I hate that movie, but the Friday the 13th fan that I am, I have to have it. I hate it, but I have it. Another thing goes for Texas Chainsaw. Was it Next Generation or whatever? How stupid that one was. Of course I have it. But, of course I'm going to have this one. I'm definitely going to watch it again after talking about it and seeing it, some of the other things in it. And I want to go back and watch all the other ones, as well as the Insidious ones.
Plus, you never know, like, with The Nun. I mean, in some parts, it seemed like there was more. But probably maybe for budget or for time they had to edit it. But I would like to see if there is going to be a director's cut of this. Because you know that they always got to edit. If every film had a director's cut, that would be dope. And just kind of a side note, September, man, this month we get It Chapter 1 director's cut. So everybody be on the lookout for that. But yeah, man, I hope that when they release this, that it'll have some, or at least some deleted scenes, because I was really juiced for this one. I mean, I don't know, all five cinemas that were showing this around the same time were all sold out when I went and saw it. So my theater was packed. I mean, and that's usually the best time to go see a good film like this, cause everybody gets into it. And I was juiced up that Frenchie got a couple of claps. You know, when he showed up and rescued him, and is kind of like, okay, cool. You know, that dude wasn't no punk. And of course, I was laughing my ass off when he, you know, spoiler alert, when he took that big ass crucifix from the graveyard. He's like, yeah, I'm taking this with me. He's carrying it around with him.
He was basically the comic relief throughout the whole film. So. I think there was more comedy in this than there has been in any of the other ones. So,
yeah.
Other than the dread of it all being out in the dark, this film was all shot in the dark, basically. But yeah, I liked that they threw that in instead of being scared the whole time. My theater was full of nothing but teens and college kids. I was kind of pissed in the beginning because I thought they wouldn't shut up, but. They were pretty quiet during the film. This movie has made $53.5 million already this weekend. I'm sure tomorrow on Monday it'll be higher, but damn. This was something that everyone was waiting for, and I knew a lot of horror fans were really geared up for it. If you look on it on Rotten Tomatoes, they kind of gave it a bad score. So, but. I don't know. When I always see those type of things, it was always seems like they're not your average horror watcher. So I don't know. Well, we'll see whatever comes next. I think what's next for me that I'm super excited for is not until next month, and that's the return of Michael Myers when we get Halloween. What is it? 40
years.
40 years later.
Yeah.
It erases everything from part two all the way to resurrection. So,
damn, I was gonna tell you too. For those of you listening, I had the honor and the privilege to meet LL Cool J this past was it last week, last weekend, I think. I was in Burbank at Barnes & Noble, and there he was, you know, and he was so nice. I mean, he's really a nice guy. Shook my hand. We took a picture together and talked for a second. But, oh, man, everything, you know, when you meet celebrities, you just say, oh, cool, you know. And then you think later on, shit, I should have asked him this. I wanted to ask him about Halloween because it was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That dude was in H2O. So, but it's interesting how many people, you know, just kind of we're gonna talk a little bit of Halloween real quick, but how many people don't like the second one? You know, they just absolutely hate it, and it's like, as far as you know, being a Halloween film, if they just left it at 1 and 2, that would have been fine. But I'm juiced to see, what this next one is gonna do. Like I'm going in with an open mind, you know. I'm not expecting it to, you know, because I don't know which way this movie's going to swing. And as one thing that I wanted to mention, just real quick, is like what I think is cool about this new one is one this is my favorite horror movie. Halloween is my all time favorite horror movie, and one thing I was really just hoping they would do is like please bring back the mask, the original. I don't want them Stooge, Spirit, Halloween store mask. You know what I'm talking about? Those are plain white, just the mask. You know, it's just called the mask. You know, I don't want no Stooge, fake Shemp, Halloween mask. I wanted the real Captain Kirk, eyes stretched out, you know, hair teased out. I wanted that one. And when the mask was revealed, the one thing I thought, of course, there's a lot of people like, oh, it's not the same mask. But you know what? What's a trip is like if you associate Michael Myers with just having that mask, not even seeing his real face, if Michael Myers for you is the white mask, then if you look at this mask, it looks like it aged like an old man would. And that's what I think is cool. And I have the honor of like, I got one of the action figures. I got one of the NECA figures. And if you look at the mask, it's like, whoa, you know, it really looks like the mask aged with Michael Myers. So I thought that was cool that, you know, I don't know when, let me ask you a question with the younger audience seeing the preview, prior, did you have Halloween before the preview before you saw The Nun?
Yeah.
Was it one of the what's the reaction of people that watch it, like in the theater? Do you get a lot of groans? You get a lot of people laughing at it? Do you anything?
I got the another one. I mean, like, either they don't know that this is a race's, like I said, part two all the way to Resurrection. This is a direct sequel only to the first one. A lot of people don't know that. I school my kids. I mean, Tiga and Marky and everyone, they all know. And I told Eric, he had seen the original Halloween, but I said, we're going to have to watch it again so you can have a refresher when we go in and see this one. So, but yeah, I mean, your non-average or your non-horror watcher is just going to think another one because in the 80s and 90s, they were throwing these out left and right. And so we'll see. And then we got the Rob Zombie ones. I love the original part two. I hated Rob Zombie's vision. I mean, I love Rob Zombie. I don't know what he was trying to do. I know a lot of people said, oh, that one was better than the original. You get out of here with that. but I don't know. I mean, did you see the trailer they showed here in town was the first Halloween trailer. Did you see the new one, the second one they came out with?
Yeah, the one with the whatchamacallit, where the little kids bumped into him.
Yeah, the
at the beginning. Yeah, that one. Yeah,
see the one that they did a shout out to the original Halloween 2, which I thought was awesome, and the Halloween 3 with the silver shamrock masks. Did you see that?
Is that in the second the second one?
Yeah, in the second trailer.
No, okay, I didn't see the mask, but what was the shout out for the second
one? Remember in the second one when he goes into the house and gets the knife when that lady's in there making sandwiches?
Yeah.
They show that. They just show her in the kitchen and you see
She was okay, yeah. And then one thing that another homage to part two is that little kid's dressed as a cowboy carrying the boombox.
Oh yeah.
And then he bumps into him. So I was like, "Oh, okay, that's cool." But that whole beginning sequence, the one thing I love is that him walking around, Michael Myers walking around, is played by Nick Castle.
Yeah.
Because Nick Castle, you can tell by the way he's walking that's Nick Castle. That's the original shape.
Yeah, because I remember the first one you see, the first trailer they showed us, and we already knew who he was. There was no secret to it, but when you first see him walking, and if you're such a huge fan like the two of us are of the original one, you can tell that, like you said, that we knew that was him walking.
When he does that turn,
yeah.
When he looks towards the house, that's like, oh, that's Nick Castle.
Yeah, so it's awesome that he got to come back as it, and I'm glad that they went to him. A friend of ours and friend of the show. Eugene Brave Rock. Yeah.
Yes, Brave Rock.
I keep wanting to say Brave Hawk. I know I said that left and right on one of these episodes, but he actually got to meet him. Where was he? He was over in Europe, wasn't it?
Yeah, they're in London. London, yeah. Comic-Con.
Oh, man. He was up in Portland this weekend, past weekend. And did you see that picture of him and Val Kilmer?
Yeah, man. Val, man. Oh my God, Val! You need to take care of yourself, brother. Just God.
Did they start filming Top Gun 2 yet?
I think so. I mean, I know you're waiting in line for it.
Of course, I'm gonna see it.
Oh, come on, man! I mean,
just give me a lot of jets, and I don't need no love story. We already saw that one, and it was horrible.
Yeah,
I don't want to get into that. Everyone knows my feelings on Top Gun.
Oh, come on. You know they got to have a remix of like Take My Breath Away with like Rihanna or Adele or somebody. You know, so somebody going to need a hit single around that time. So
the Zisu wants Kenny Loggins' Danger Zone. I hate that song too, but it better be the original one. Don't have Nickelback or Opeth or some stooge band like that.
What? You know Opeth? Are you kidding me?
So.
Typo negative? I mean. So.
They can't have no typo negative. Rest in peace. I can't remember the singer's name. He passed away a while ago, but just stick with Kenny Loggins, even if he has to redo it and then rock it up a little. All right, but don't get no stooge band, Maroon 5 or somebody dumb like that to redo it.
Have MGK do it. But are you gonna be able to come down for John Carpenter?
Probably not, because I think
gotta see him, dude. Even if it's at the Warfield, you gotta see this dude, man. This will be my second time going, and this time I got a meet and greet VIP pass, so I get to meet the man and, you know, just tell him how I designed a shirt, you know, for that shirt that I did of Kurt Russell, all the characters he's played in John Carpenter films. And one thing I was showing that design to people, one thing everybody misses, if you look at his belt, I put the Elvis glasses hanging from his gun belt. So yeah, everybody always forgets that Kurt was Elvis.
Yep. Speaking of John Carpenter, did you see that they're putting out Starman? I think Shout Factory is doing it.
Now I've upgraded. Is it gonna be 4K?
I don't know.
Because either way, I'll get it.
I'm getting it.
Yeah, because I know the thing comes out November 6th, and that's gonna be a 4K. September 26th or 25th. What you call it? Comes out Halloween. Halloween comes out. The Creepshow one is in November also. Don't know the exact date, but yeah, the Halloween one is in 4K, and then Creepshow also is going to be 4K. But I mean, even like just real quick, if when you get your 4K stuff, because I know Black Friday you're going to upgrade, it makes even your regular Blu-rays look beautiful. So like right now, just for noise, I have The Hobbit playing. And it just looks, it's not 4K regular Blu-ray. So beautiful. Just looks really good. So, all right, quick product placement. LG, buy LG. LG is the best. Anyway, man.
Speaking of movies that are on Blu-ray, I realized that a German company put out a Trick or Treat, the original, not the Sam one. Shot Factory is also putting that out. Whatever that year that one came out. The one
did you watch that yet?
No, I haven't. I haven't watched
it. God, dude, come on, man. Oh. That movie's like, it's like a Halloween Pulp Fiction.
I'll get to it. I have it. I'll get to it. But then I saw that Shout Factory, Scream Factory, whatever you want to call it, is putting it out. I'm like, damn it, I jumped the gun. So, but anyway, the original Trick or Treat. A German company put it out, and it's all regions, so I'm going to have to get it. And what I like about this one is it's called Ragman. It says Ragman and the big letters, and it says Trick or Treat under it. So I'm like, oh, sweet. So,
was that the original name of the film?
I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I'm definitely going to get it. It'll probably be a little bit pricey just because it's an import, but it's all regions, so I'm all about that. So,
I've never seen that.
What?
Yeah, you guys all went to Parkway, and I didn't get to go. I think it was Grounded or something, but I remember you guys all went, and you came back telling me about it, and I was like, oh, man. And then by the time I got off punishment, this is when I was really young, y'all. When I finally got off punishment, it was already out of the theater.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah, check it out. I have it on DVD. One of those little rinky-dink companies put it out. I mean, it's not the best, but I have the VHS, and I love the soundtrack. But I'm glad that shout out to Cool Duder, Sean Phillips. Watch his videos on YouTube. They send him all kinds of videos and everything, or not videos, Blu-rays and all that, DVDs, and he reviews them. And this his last. Blu-ray review, he had Ragman, so I was like, oh my god. So I'm a huge fan of that film. Yeah, it's cheesy and stupid, but it's awesome to me, and like I said, the soundtrack rocks, so I'm gonna pick it up.
Hey, real quick, did you hear that they're doing a sequel to Train to Busan?
I think they did it already. Is it gonna be a live action one, because there's an animated one?
I think it's gonna be live action.
They're remaking it, I know that, which I think is stupid, but
what are you, wait, an American one or
yeah, that's what they're talking about.
Oh, come on, man. They just need to that movie The Wailing, I just finally watched it, and that's another one, just leave that film alone.
They can't leave it alone. I'm sure they'll make it
just like that. And then real quick, let's talk about Netflix real quick. Terrifier. If you haven't seen Terrifier, man, check that one out.
It's going around. Everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, it's a good homage to the gore retro 80s slasher film type thing.
Cool.
But that was good.
Before we get away from before I forget, give us, like I mentioned earlier, Mike did the designs for our East Society, as well as my Macnez t-shirt that you can get. But he's, if you don't know, I'm sure some of most of you do know that he designs t-shirts. And tell us, everyone, where they can get those or where they can see them.
You can get my t-shirts at teespring.com/stores/redgear96. That's TEESPRING/stores/redgear96. All my stuff is on there. The Mac, you can go to that site to get the Macnez podcast t-shirts, which I encourage everyone to get. And just check out all my artwork is original. I've been designing stuff since 1996. Red Gear Productions has been my t-shirt business, a family-owned business since 1996. So I finally, this year, started in May designing new stuff. And now I'm up to 84 new designs within, 3-4 months? I've done 85 new designs. So yeah, check me out at teespring.com/stores/redgear96. And you can hit me up on Facebook at Mike J. Marin, MikeJMarin. And real quick, anybody, any of you listeners in the San Diego area, UC San Diego will be showing my film, The Smudging, at their Native American Heritage Days, and that will be November 16th. Macnez and I will both be there for that, so come hang out with us. There's a bar there. Come kick it with us after the screening. But that's November 16th at this place called The Loft, which is on the UC San Diego campus. My film will be shown at 8 o'clock. So please come through. Free admission. It's free. It's free. Can't be free. So come check it out there. And I have a couple more screenings coming up, but Macnez will let you guys know when those will be. But for right now, in the Los Angeles area, anybody in the Arizona area, around Parker, Arizona, September 27th at the Blue Water Cinemas, next to the Blue Water Resort and Casino, they'll be showing my film at the Native Visions Film Festival, and that'll be on Friday, September 27th, and that will be at 5 p.m. at Blue Water Cinemas, Parker, Arizona. So if you're in the area, please go check it out.
Cool, man. Right on. Hey, thanks for coming on the show. And, man, this East Society is going to be a long one, because we went a little over an hour on this one. But, hey, man, it's all right. Hey, everyone, thank you so much for listening. Like I said earlier, this was a little bonus, a big bonus to the episode. So we're probably pushing at least, if not 3 hours, over, depending on how long the first part went. But anyway, everyone, hey, man, thanks, everyone, for listening. Mike, you're always welcome to come on here, and you're going to hear Mike more. And like you said, when we were down in San Diego, we're going to do some recording there. I'm going to try to get some what the crowd thought of the film. If you've listened to some of my earlier episodes, I did it. I know I did it at IFH, and I can't remember. I don't remember. We've been to so many of these. I lose track. But
well, you were at the premiere in Chicago at the patio 2 years ago. God, that's already 2 years.
I saw it twice. I saw it twice in Chicago, once in San Francisco, once in Oakland, the numerous other times that I watched it. I don't know. But yeah, we'll be there, everyone. So definitely I'll let you come back on before that and after and during and everything else that we do. Mike's always a part of this whole show. He's part of the family, and it's late, so we're getting out of here. So, all right, man. Well, hey, man, thanks for coming on again. And everybody, thank you so much for listening to Eat Society. Mike's going to be on my Macnez podcast that we recorded a couple months ago, but I haven't. I've just been lazy on putting it out, but that's coming soon. So, hey, everyone, thank you so much for listening. And East Society and director Mike Marin are out of here. Peace.
Peace. Peace out.